And we are on day 32 since we started looking at the Enlightenment and also Michael's book, The End of Suffering. And some of those shows, I've got all the links just for those shows out in a separate page called The Enlightenment Study. It's listed under the Kabors, where you can pick those up either on YouTube or Podbean. And, you know, but still the show is here. If you have a question that, whether it has something to do with the Aramaic or the Enlightenment or something else that we can help you process. And we do, Michael, already have a hand up. I'm not sure if it's left over from Dr. Tim or if it's a new one.
Let's go for it.
All right. 541, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is Selinda. I just forgot to take it off. So I'm here and ready.
Michael, you're muted.
Awesome, and hope all is blessed in your world.
Would you repeat that, please? You just came in.
I say awesome, and hope all is blessed in your world.
Well, the valley thinks so, because we got some more snow, so everybody's kind of happy at the moment. Everything. Pardon?
I say, Burr, I'm holding that tonight, which is supposed to be down to 25 again, is going to be our last frosty night. At least the weather for the next 10 days is showing it, so hopefully winter's finished here.
We've learned here in the valley, wait 5 minutes.
And the weather turns around.
Oh, yeah, nature has always the last laugh. Yep. So it's all good. Everything is fine here, and I will hang up in case somebody else wants to call in, or in case you'd like to hear from the Suffering or the Kabbalah Institute Enlightenment book. Bye-bye.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye. Well, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody with a question that was sent in via the app or email or what have you?
No.
And or anybody else with a hand up?
No, it is all quiet.
Anything happening in the chat room?
There are no hands up and no questions in an email, so take off with it.
All right. Well, we're going to circle back now to the Enlightenment book, and I'm going to step back into page 23 to just kind of reinforce some of what we've said about the core principle of the work. When you think, you know, we've got this metaphor in our world today about of computers, and so much that we can understand about ourselves through the metaphor of a computer. And one of the things that, as I think about this core principle that Yeshua put forward, you know, he says that Rachma, filtering the frontal lobes of the brain, must be active when you think of creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain your own human life. In other words, in order to maintain intelligence. There is no intelligence in the mind. Any more than there's intelligence in a computer. There are capabilities, but there's no intelligence. You know, if I program the computer 2 + 2 = 5, then the computer is going to answer to when I say what's 2 + 2, it's going to say 5. There's no intelligence there. It's just a resonating device. And when you think about computers being hacked, my take is this answer from Yeshua, when they asked him what's most important in the law, we could expand that question to what's most important to keep your life on track as a human being and keep your mind in order. And he says the first order of business is have this filter in the frontal lobes of the brain. This gateway in the frontal lobes of the brain has a dual function that brings active present love into your form. Otherwise, you can be easily hacked in computer language. And my take is that most of the world has had their minds hacked. And how do you tell if a mind has been hacked? It functions or acts out of some form of hostility or fear, and therefore has lost its human operator. And so if one is guided by a guidance system that's off base, then the guidance system has been hacked. What's the guidance system? It's perception. Perception being a construct of the mind. So where we had left off was this idea of perception being the guide for your life. We had spent quite a bit of time on that. So the quote goes like this from the Aramaic, the light or the guide for your earthly life is perception. Therefore, if your perception is without fault, that is, if it's based in Rachma, your whole life will be enlightened. The objective of this book is enlightenment. That is, keep your lights on. If your perception be unfit, if the constructs of your mind be based in hostility or fear, then your whole life will be darkened by it. And if the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? So if your mind's been hacked by hostility or fear, I can say that I don't think I've ever met a person whose mind has not been hacked. And you go back to the ancient teachings and they said, there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. And my take is, the whole world has been fooled. What's it been fooled by? A darkened mind that feeds a fraud or a lie to us that there's a reason to act out of some form of hostility or fear, and by so doing, give up our human lives. For me, the objective of this work is to maintain your human life. So if we start at the page 24, our opinions based on perception control our behaviors. Selections of actions and decisions are based in perception. And of course, this is what counseling is designed to improve. This is what therapy is designed to do. Values, and this was a real bugaboo for Dan, was that so many people were talking about values. And this section was written by Dan. Values were classically considered in Western mental health to be the first step. This cannot be true, as values themselves are opinions. There has to be a prior step before the formation of every opinion or value. Immanuel Kant, in the early years of the 19th century, concluded that perceptions are organizations of a limited amount of presently available data and relating memories. He considered opinions to be organizations of relative perceptions. Thus, he placed perceptions as the first step. We're not going to do that. We're going to put Rachma as the first step. This key that Yeshua gave, a way to make sure that your mind cannot be hacked. The normal counseling of criminals to improve their values, and thus their behavior, is recognized as a failure. When the words of the higher law are used to correct the meanings of faulty words that sustain criminal perceptions in a mind, the counseling of criminals becomes an exciting success. It becomes effective. As the words that cause criminal perceptions and behaviors cease, and we could, you know, this was originally, a lot of Dan's work was done in the prisons, so the criminal mind was key, and actually he went into working with the prison systems, two reasons. Judge Asadi Kelly asked for something for prisoners, and he had been doing some correspondence with British intelligence, and they said, well, if you want to straighten out the human mind, the only place to test it is the prisons. words that cause criminal perceptions and behaviors cease, criminality ceases. Criminal opinions, values, and behaviors begin to disappear. Counseling of criminals becomes a pleasant, rewarding, and successful activity. From 1973 to 1978, in Albany, Georgia, 96% of convicted felons at liberty in the community under probation sentencing were back to jail on a meaningful arrest during a five-year period, despite receiving normal counseling. However, if they took the available Laws of Living course, or its predecessor, EMI, to improve the faulty words behind their criminal perceptions, opinions, and behavior, only 16% went back to jail for a meaningful arrest in that same five-year period. To change an opinion, the perceptions upon which it is based must first be changed. To change a perception which is faulty, the faulty word meaning or meanings which created and sustained the faulty perception must be corrected. And that's exactly what Laws of Living does. A value is an opinion. It cannot be the sire of itself. It cannot be the beginning point for all opinions. Words and word meanings that built perception is the first step. So you go back and you hear now echoes through Dan's writing here of Yeshua in the first century, where he says, the power of life and death is in your words. Since the beginning point of unwholesome opinions, actions, and decisions are perceptions, counselors and educators could benefit greatly from correcting relevant perceptions. This is accomplished by correcting the words that support poor perception. Inaccurate perceptions are the cause one to believe and accept that destructive decisions and behavior are wholesome. If the relating words and perceptions are corrected, unwholesome opinions and the destructive decisions and behavior they produce will automatically be corrected. So, we again hear the echo of Yeshua's words, or the ancient scriptures' words. I'm not sure this actually came out of Yeshua's mouth, but basically, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. That you've got to remove from your own unconscious mind those things which are in error in you that you've projected into your brain's image of everyone else. So remember, when somebody's in denial, they have to hide the truth from themselves. What is denial? When I think or speak as though you're the cause, you out there are the cause of what's happening inside of me, I'm in denial. Now my mind has to formulate a perception, a construct that shows me that you're the problem. And my mind paints that picture on the inside of my eyeballs. I think I'm looking out there and I'm looking at you and that you are the problem. This, I believe, is what led Paul to say, beware you who judge another. For that in which you judge another, you've been guilty of practicing. What you have upset and disturbance about is a picture painted on the inside of your eyeballs, projected into your brain's image of someone else. And so those perceptions, the core of forgiveness and what needs to happen is those perceptions must be collapsed in order to get to the root of and the correction of those parts of one's mind. Laws of Living targets words and perceptions that relate to higher law. This current edition has expanded on the original work, adding more of the pivotal passages from the Kabbalah Codex. These passages were selected because of their importance and their illustrative nature in comprehending the Aramaic understanding of the mind and its relationship to the Creator. More specifically, the selected passages are meant to demonstrate the hows of the teachings of Yeshua. Soon, many more will be available from the text of the Kabbalah, of which only a portion has been rendered into English. And, you know, we don't know what we don't know yet from that text, and it is not currently undergoing any sort of translation work, or there's no work being done on it. The project ran out of money, and so we had enough continue to work with without doing additional translation work. So it still hangs out there waiting for day when funding shows up. So this volume is an expansion, update, and revision of the pioneering work of the Onan Codex Foundation, incorporating the latest of the Foundation's findings. This work is ongoing, and updates will be released on a periodic basis. The Kabouris Codex has been placed under the stewardship of the Kabouris Ancient Manuscript Institute, established by the Orthodox Christian Institute, followers of the Church of Antioch. The vision of Dan McDougall for the manuscript was that it would be an open source document and placed in a museum for public exhibition. Unfortunately, the physical Kabouris has been removed from circulation and sold. We are working toward creating high-resolution copies that will be made available for the world community so that, at least in part, Dan's vision can be carried out. So, when we go to the Greek language, virtually every key word important to life has been turned exactly backward. Forgiveness has been made pardoning. I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. If I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, have I done anything to change that which is moving in me that is causing my pain? I've done nothing. So we want to reestablish the meaning of forgiveness. Forgiveness is a tool with which you go inside yourself. You find the aberrant energy and information that is painting pictures on the inside of your eyeballs is your perceptions, collapsing those perceptions, giving you access to the underlying faulty data, corrupt data, and correcting it. That's what forgiveness is. Love. You know, we've been told that love is sexual athletics or, you know, self-sacrifice, put your head on the chopping block and then be tortured for somebody else. Those words have nothing whatsoever to do with love. Love is a state of being. It's what we are. If you don't know that, then everything in your life is off base. Law. Law is a major, especially, you know, right now in our culture. And we have, in particular at this point, you know, you've often heard me say that law is not the rule of a superior in the Aramaic language. And you'll notice that somebody today in this culture who thinks they're superior to everybody else is trying to redefine the whole idea of law. And that's what the non-being mind does. And you'll notice how much hostility or fear there is in it these days. Law simply means the way things work. It doesn't mean the rule of the superior, and that the superior is really peeved with you because you're not following the rules that were laid down. So law is simply the way it works. And men have tried to change the definition of that word and then tried to get out from under law so that they could create their own definitions and become a law unto themselves. And I'll just offer, you know, because the way it works is the way it works is the way it works. Nobody has a choice about it. That's never going to change. But until we understand what the word law means, there'll be this game about fighting over who's going to be the superior rather than investing our energy into how does this energy system work and what's the dynamic that's happening here. So we could go on and on about the words involved, and as it unfolds, there'll be more and more of that uncovered. So we're going to go into the introduction to the Yonan Codex. Remember, there were two different texts. The Yonan Codex was one that belonged to a man named Yonan, and it was a family manuscript, and it was a 6th to 7th century text. Nobody's really exactly sure. There are different estimates, and it was not a complete text. So that's one of the texts that the Kabouris Foundation, or actually the original social service agency in Albany, Georgia, was working with. And then the Kabouris was acquired by the foundation and became the root of the work. But this is the few minutes. So it was the predecessor. It was the original Aramaic manuscript that was being used to create emotional maturity instruction. By the time we, Dan and I met and we put our work together and created Laws of Living, you know, I had been doing a course called Lessons in Living, and Dan had been doing EMI. We put it together and created Laws of Living. That work started with the Kaboris. We already had the Kaboris by that point. So in April 1954, the manuscript, the New Testament in Aramaic language, was first shown to public in America. On that day, the Onan Codex was, at his request, presented to the White House. Dwight D. Eisenhower at the White House, and Secretary of State John Foster Dulles. After their examination, it was then transported to the Library of Congress for display. In an emotion-packed unveiling, panelist speakers, headed by the Secretary of State, gave tribute in an impressive ceremony. The Onan Codex was labeled as, quote, the New Testament time bomb by Reverend Frederick Brown Harris, the chaplain in the United States Senate. His words quoted here most appropriately describe its importance. The NT of the title stand for New Testament. More profound in its final significance than the rest, the test of any instrument of deadly destruction on the Nevada desert was a recent April scene at the Capitol of the nation. The setting was exquisitely beautiful, the Great Hall of the Library of Congress, that cathedral of learning and letters where are stored and garnered treasures of all man's searching and striving, received that day into its custody a priceless volume, safely insured for $1.5 million. Of course, that was 50s. Today, it's probably more like 40 million. It was escorted by motorized police and armed guards. It was about 1,600 years ago, this skillful scribe, with inevitable pride and expert workmanship, laboriously yet joyously inscribed on parchment vellum the entire New Testament. The chapter headings in red are still timelessly brilliant. Across the centuries, through the varied vicissitudes of history, invasion and catastrophic social and political changes, including cruel examples of man's inhumanity to man, this book has been all miraculously preserved. Presents the canon of the New Testament in which the early followers of the great Galilean were in agreement before divisive controversy split the church. But the thing that lifts it to the pinnacle of biblical interest it is it's written as in the language used by Yeshua, who spake as no man never spake, and the vehicle of his deathless concepts of life. Here are the very syllables as they fell from his lips. And the matchless teacher was here among men. It is like hearing the one whose birth broke the ages in two, talking to our modern age without language barrier between. Here's not a translation of the words, but the words themselves of the one who, under that pale blue sky, or that blue sky of Palestine, declared, "My words shall not pass away. They are spirit and they are life." Gazing across the years to be, he warned that those who defy his precepts, which are the laws of life, will be ground to powder. What treasures will be found in this very language of Yeshua can only be imagined as it is studied. The Aramaic language presents an imagery unknown to the Western mind, but well known to the mind of the East. Aramaic was the lingua franca of the Persian Empire. It stretched from the Mediterranean to the Great Wall of China for more than 1,000 years before and after the birth of Yeshua. The Aramaic language, unlike any other language on earth, has no known place of beginning, nor does it appear to have gone through an evolutionary period. It is as if it sprang to life, fully matured, fully grown. An Easterner, speaking Aramaic, could walk 4,000 miles and communicate with everybody that he met. Carried upon the imagery of the Aramaic, the Zoroastrian religion grew to its full flower. It is the language of most of the prophets of the Judeo-Christian faith, Yeshua is the phonics and language of Muhammad. There are many who, as with the New Testament, will deny it was written in Aramaic. It had to be written in Greek. There are many who will tell us that the Quran was written in Arabic. It was not. It was written in Aramaic. Its symbols appear upon the bricks lying in the plain near Babylon, which are thought to be the building blocks of the Tower of Babel, and it is, of course, the language of the famous Dead Sea Scrolls. The Aramaic imagery and capacity for communicating the subtleties of religion after this record of use and of success cannot be disputed. However, its difficulty of comprehension for Western intelligence is great. Perhaps this difficulty underlies the fact, so poetically phrased by Rudyard Kipling, East is East, and West is West, and never the twain shall meet. And basically, you know, what he's saying there is there are two different mindsets. When we go to the Beatitudes, basically the Beatitudes are a set of instructions for creating a mindset that will support and express a life lived as and in love. Not exactly the culture of the Western world. The construction of the Aramaic language involves the use of a multitude of suffixes and prefixes attached to a root word so as to establish new meaning. This, of course, also is true in every Western language. For instance, we have the word dress, and by a suffix change change it from one to more than one, dresses. We have the word man, and by a prefix change the gender to female, woman. By suffix or prefix, the English language modifies the meaning of a root word in many, many ways. In Aramaic, however, there are suffixes which modify the root word meaning in terms of comprehension not widely known to Western intelligence. In Aramaic syntax, the suffix uta, O-O-T-A, indicates the concept designated by the root word is then human action, active human judgment and behavior. So, just adding that suffix to a word tells us what's happening in a mind. Thus, uta added to the root word sne indicates a malicious, vicious human judgment and behavior. The suffix ta, T-A, indicates the root concept is a present mindset or attitude, a force in the mind exercising a control function over what can be perceived, what can be stored in or recalled from memory, and what can be used in judgment formation. So while those who resist what Yeshua put forward talk about, well, what did those old fogies in the desert know? You just need to look at that one single paragraph, and you understand there's a comprehension of how the mind works and how to maintain the use and control of your own mind, as opposed to the mind being hacked and being run by dynamics outside of oneself. It's called brainwashing, called a cult. You watch what people do under the control of a cult leader, and you see what happens when one does not understand how to protect their own mind from being hacked. The Beatitudes, good attitudes in Matthew, pardon me, carry this TA suffix, indicating the beneficial traits recited stem from a mindset or sets, the controlling forces within the mind predictive and causal to this resulting judgment and behavior. In other words, the rules that if you know them, and that's what the Beatitudes are, you know, it's like the Beatitudes, and we'll cover those as we unfold, Beatitudes are not just a nice philosophy. There's a set of instructions for how to put your mind in a place where it is a proper servant to you and is not available for others to hijack. Modern psychology has uncovered two distinct types of mindsets exercising control. One type is goals, objectives, or desires, what one wants to do. The predominant goal of the moment, either conscious or unconscious, essentially controls what data the brain will select or use among the whole supply of data always available from the five senses in memory. So, hence, we see how Yeshua, having this understanding, came up with the core of forgiveness is, you've got to know what drives perception and how to collapse it. And what drives it is goals. And so the core of forgiveness is the canceling of goals, which collapses the perception that is based in some form of hostility or fear. Restore the mind to love and you restore the mind to intelligence. A second and more pervasive mindset is that controlling what is cued or triggered into use by the data selected in response to the goal. An examination of the Beatitudes shows both types of controlling mindsets, that is, goals and cue controls, to be designated by the TA suffix. Thus, in the translation text, the English word attitude is faithful to the Aramaic meaning of TA, ta, so as to include both the data selection controls and cue controls. This is incredible to realize that all this information was built into Yeshua's My Words Are Life idea 2,000 years ago. If a mind is overrun with hostility or fear and one lives in that state, there is no human life. I mean, literally, there is no human life active in that form. And so, by understanding correctly, not Greek interpretations, and, you know, it's only recently really occurred to me that what most people call translations of the Bible that come out of the Greek, through the Latin, through the Old English, through the Modern English, are not translations at all. They're all interpretations. Translations would mean an accurate integration of the original concepts in the words in order to have a translation. And it just isn't there. With the fact of these two controlling mind forces before us, we can understand the dilemma of him who stated, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." You know, there's Shakespeare. Under Aramaic understanding of the mind, he had a poor attitude. Apparently, he had a sound goals, but poor cue controls. Thus, while his words were sound, what was being cued was unsound. So, one remains unconscious of the source of their words when they're in this place that Shakespeare talked about, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." And the genius technology of forgiveness that empowers us to uncover in a reliable, consistent, persistent way the unconscious dynamics of the mind is, in this context, just like, it doesn't get bigger than that. The use and meaning of these suffixes confront us with the question of what is represented by the root word standing alone when it is without the ta or the uta suffix. When it is not an active mindset or attitude, nor active behavior and judgment. Thus, sneuta is active, malicious, vicious behavior and judgment. Sneta is the attitude of mind, the attitude or mindset productive of malicious, vicious behavior and judgment. But what is designated by the word sne? Apparently, the root word to which the ta or uta can be appended represents a stored mental capacity, a latent, finite entity of mind, that is a construct of the mind, perception, available yet inactive. a mind structure or formation developed, inherited, and planted, or otherwise acquired and readily available for activity. There is no English word for such an entity except the word gestalt, applied by Wolfgang von Kohler. The Russian Christian scholar Ivan Pavlov, whose father was an Aramaic preacher, gave the world his conditioning experiments whereby he changed, developed, and reorganized mind entities, these structures of mind. Meaning of the word gestalt is so fragmented in modern use, another term was sought. The term neural structure was first used, but in this edition, the term mind structure is employed to designate the entities, organizations, or formations within the unconscious mind, which are the biochemical electrical representations of our available perceptions, ideas, or capacities. So we have these latent neural structures, and they can be made of experiences, words that have been heard or spoken, and genetic material can all contribute to these entities of mind, we might call them. And then to be conscious of what cues them into activity and to recognize when they are of a corrupt nature, and therefore how to remove them becomes key. Ultimately, the objective of this work, at least, you know, one way of saying it would be to be able to forgive, that is, remove entities of mind, structures that when they lie dormant in the unconscious and are resonating through activity, take over. And there are many habits that make it easier for those entities in mind to take over. And there are rules by which you can bring your mind back into alignment with the highest function of the mind. In the Western mind, Sigmund Freud was more than entitled to a Nobel Prize for his discovery, and it was actually a rediscovery, of the unconscious mind. Apparently, for untold thousands of years before the birth of Yeshua, the existence of the unconscious mind and its functioning was so well known to the Aramaic-speaking people that it was literally part of the syntax and grammar. A translation of the Aramaic, and the Greeks, I mean, until Freud came along, the Greeks had no idea what we were talking about. A translation of the Aramaic teachings of Yeshua into Western imagery, such as English, which preserves these psychological distinctions inherent in the words actually used by Yeshua himself, gives to the Western mind new and deeper insight into his words. This new evangelion, or good news, is the meaning that splendid Aramaic word applied so many years ago to his teachings. For the first time, the Western mind can easily see, hear, and understand the psychology taught by Yeshua. And in my awareness, this approach to the Aramaic language, this comprehension of the Aramaic language, just doesn't show up in any other translation than the work that was done by the Social Service Agency and the Kavuris Foundation. Truly, the Creator moves in mysterious ways. Until the discovery of the unconscious in 1898, there was no way for the Western mind to intellectually understand the rules for sound mind development and management contained in the Aramaic teachings of Yeshua of Nazareth. There is no way for a chemistry book to be properly translated if the translator is ignorant of chemistry. Unless there's an idea within the human mind, there can never be a word for it. Without the public acceptance of the science of psychology, there would be no way to communicate the psychological teachings of Yeshua from his native Aramaic. Without the eyes to see and the ears to hear, without the information stored in brain cells, an idea cannot be comprehended through the mind. So this is what Yeshua was saying. In order to understand and use his teaching, you had to have the eyes to see, or to see, and the ears to hear. One may well wonder what other wisdom is in that purest truth ever made known on earth, waiting for us to build the brain cells and discover. You know, we don't know what we don't know yet on this subject before we may understand that he's already explained it. Who knows? Perhaps someone has just received a Nobel Prize for the discovery of a subject which 10 years from now we'll find explained in these ancient teachings. The physical examination of the Yonin Codex reveals the unfortunate fact that both the front and back pages of this remarkable document have been replaced with text written on paper instead of the original hide. This was a crucial absence of antiquity and authenticity, since the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of St. Matthew was on the paper pages rather than the hide pages, whose antiquity and authenticity were thought to be, by many, to exceed that of any New Testament manuscript then known. The particular portions missing represented an important part of the transcription of the only gospel preached in Aramaic, the only gospel which substantially all scholars, both Eastern and Western, agree was first written in Aramaic. According to the foundation set out, the foundation set out to acquire a text of the Gospel of Matthew in the ancient Aramaic, transcribed on the original hide. Another foundation was fortunate in securing, in 1966, the Aramaic New Testament, now known as the Kabor's Manuscript, in which almost all of the text of the Gospel according to Matthew is presented on the original animal skin. The age of the manuscript is interesting, but not key. The news presented here is not the antiquity of the manuscript, but a totally inaccurately, totality and accuracy of the psychological wisdom expressed in the Aramaic syntax and content sense. The complete history of the Kabor's manuscript is unknown. It was secured by the Onan Codex Foundation by the gift of two Americans who are thought to have secured it from an ancient religious sect known by modern scholars as an Nestorian sect. Is a surviving remnant of the Sea of Babylon of the Church of the East. It's thought by some to have been out of a library in a small church atop one of the mountains in Kurdistan. The contents of this library were seized by Turkish authorities in 1966 and are now in Ankara, Turkey, as per an announcement in the Istanbul Gazette of June the 11th, 1966. Complete with pictures of the church and some of the documents then in hand. The language of this small church is Aramaic, and it was spoken by Yeshua of Nazareth. Their script is Estranglia, long thought to be dead and unused script since the days of the Islamic conquest. The present condition and welfare of this church and its most reverend members is unknown. Dan believed that he had information that indicated that the monks were actually all murdered very shortly after they left Ankara. Well, Aramaic texts of the New Testament have been available in Western scholarship since Matthew was first inscribed. All known efforts to translate the Aramaic text into English have largely failed to deliver into any Western language the full insights that the translator has gained from his reading of the Aramaic. This could well have been due to the fact that all Western languages are descended from the Sanskrit language brought out of the East by the Persians in their first westward conquest. Upon contact with the Aramaic, the Persians took the Aramaic as the language of their theology and the language by which they would rule their empire. The Persian Empire lived in peace with its neighbors for over 3,000 years. Under the understanding of the Aramaic language. The Aramaic language comprehends psychology so completely it utilizes a syntax which portrays the working relationship between mindset, perception, mind structures, reason, judgment, entities of mind, human attitudes, and human behavior. It expresses an understanding of physics, of how the world works, and of humans' place in the world in a way unprecedented in history. Also, Aramaic does not distinguish verbally between the mental and the physical. The word for near in Aramaic includes the mentally near as well as the physically near. Nor does the Aramaic verbally distinguish between a cause and its effect. The same word signifies both the cause and the effect. And, you know, that one's really so important because we live in a culture where people, because cause and effect appear to be separate, people think they can engage in a cause and not have to ever deal with its effect. That's what led us to put the line on the worksheet that says, I get the original. They just get the carbon copy. So if there is an effect that I don't want to experience in my life, I best not be engaging in the cause, because energetically they are one, they're connected. We can, in perception, we can seem to separate it out. And people think they can, you know, get away with engaging in a cause without ever having to experience its effect. But the instant one engages in a cause, the effect is inherent in the cause under the Aramaic understanding. So there's no distinction between cause and effect. Such thoughts as these did not exist in the Sanskrit, nor do they exist in any of the descent languages such as Latin, Greek, English, or other Western languages. And I see that we're down to about the 15-minute point left, sweetie. So just checking in with you to see if we've got anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue, or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us. And or if you are out there, and if this arouses any thoughts for you, any discussion, and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to that show on your phone, and you'll be in our switchboard. So then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to talk to us, and we'll have a conversation.
You have a hand up.
Let's say hello.
Area code 610, I believe, is Miss Susan. Hi.
Hi. All right, thanks for this. Michael, I'm embarrassed to ask you. In the Aramaicisms, which move along awfully fast for me, do you go through each of the Beatitudes and then really flesh them out? Or are you planning to do that here? I'm listening, and my brain is not, I don't come away understanding very well. And I might be the only one that way.
Michael, if you're talking, you're muted.
I did mute my phone, excuse me. We will be going through it as the text unfolds. However, knowing Jeannie, she's probably already got the link in the notes. Back about, how long ago was that? Probably 2 years ago, Jeannie? We did several days on the Beatitudes, and there's a young man who had picked up and done some work with the Beatitudes. So we actually did an interactive conversation with this gentleman, Mark Hattis. And so those shows are in the archives, and honey, it might be good if we took those shows and put them in with the Kabura study that we're doing. The Enlightenment book, put it on the page with these.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We spent, I don't remember exactly, 3 or 4 days in conversation about that, and that'll probably rattle some brain cells for you when you listen to that.
Well, the other day, I think it was the 8th Beatitude, you had a reason for going into that one. And I don't remember why. It was amazing. I was beginning to get it. brain cells have to be created from new ozone or whatever it is to get some.
That's what it takes, absolutely. It takes building the brain cells.
Yeah.
And do you remember when that was? I talked about the Eighth Beatitude? Because that, I did. Well, we have the Beatitude poster, though. But we actually don't have it. Say again?
It was quite recently, but I don't remember which day.
Okay.
Yeah, it was well into your highlight.
It was on February the 22nd.
The girl is on it all the time.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay.
So we'll put that in the notes. But is there a question in particular about the Beatitudes that's resonating for you?
No, I'm listening and I'm saying, okay, I get it. And I'm sorry about that because I may be the only one, but so having those links to that discussion you had with that young man might be very helpful. So.
Well, if you remember, if you look at the first phrase in each of the Beatitudes, according to the Greeks, is "Blessed are they."
Right.
And in Aramaic, it's a three-part word. The word is "tuvehun," and it translates closer to this rather than "Blessed are they." What it says is, "The Creator implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they're active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being."
Wow.
So you put that in front of every one of the Beatitudes. And, you know, I actually, when I created the poster that we have on this, do you have a copy of this Beatitudes poster?
I probably do. We are actually cleaning out a lot of stuff, and I might come across it, but I don't know where it is right now. But I did get one the week of the retreat we were on.
Yeah.
But it's on the website, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a 10x13 standard frame size, so if you've got it, you might want to pop it in a frame. But basically, what it comes down to is, and when I created this poster, it was my second time through the Beatitudes, consecutive time going through and really breaking down every word from the Aramaic, that all of a sudden it struck my mind, because I'd always been taught, you know, as a kid we knew about the Beatitudes, and it was just kind of a nice philosophy, it was something nice, but it wasn't until the second time I was sitting down word by word going through the Aramaic, it was like, bingo, this is a set of instructions. This is how you access and resonate the guidance system the Creator put in you. And there's several steps, and like, when you realize that that's the only way the mind works, like these are the laws by which the mind works to bring one into happiness and well-being, it just, I mean, it changes everything. And it's like, it's there for anybody to have. And yet so many people are living in misery and trauma and pain, and they've never been given the tools.
Like a rock and instant translation machine activator. Okay.
Well, it opens. To me, what it does is it bypasses perception and takes us into actuality. It this set of instructions integrated into the mind, to me, the best way I can understand it or express it is that this actually worked through and fulfilled makes the mind a stepping stone for living in, conceiving of, and receiving the direct energetic input of actuality rather than living in the realities in the mind. We had someone who called in the other day and they, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I heard the person who called in, but that would be just, all I can say is that would be the most wonderful and beautiful thing, because I'm living in my perceptions all the time and dealing with each one ongoing. Just amazed, moment to moment, seeing the rats should they come through.
Moment to moment. And when you realize that the flow of information in most of our minds is determined by, and you look at the root of the word generation, genari means cause.
Yeah.
That flow is caused by generation upon generation upon generation upon generation having certain mental processes go on. You look at that story of the Jews wandering the desert for 40 years, and it wasn't about a hot, sandy place. It was about being stuck or lost in their own unconscious. And what had to happen to get out of the desert in that story was the old generation had to die off. All of the old causes had to be forgiven, had to be removed. Otherwise, resonating to activity, the flow of the mind will follow whatever's gone on in the generations. Hence the work of forgiveness required to change that dynamic and to create a new mindset, which is what the Beatitudes are. But much like, you know, they took the set of instructions for how to become the space where love shows up in the world, which in Aramaic is the meaning of the word prayer, the essential meaning of the word prayer, they took that and made it something you say by rote every Sunday morning, which is the exact opposite of what Yeshua said. He said, don't repeat and repeat.
Yeah.
That's now of the intellect. That's of the mind. And it's the, we're looking to bypass the mind and, in fact, to create a set in it so that it becomes a fit structure to support our human lives, our living as the active presence of love we were designed to live as. And all you have to do is face every generation of your bloodline and clean it up. Hey, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
Cough, cough.
Right.
Oh. So it's a process.
Oh.
Joining you in the process, young lady.
Yep. Good.
But we're down to the last minute or so. Any last minute thought for you?
It is too big of a thought, so let's save it for another time.
Okay, we'll make a note of it, and let's start the day out with it tomorrow. If you have the space and the inclination.
Oh, sure. I have the space
cool.
and the inclination, but it's personal, family, grandson, generational, you know what, hitting the fan sort of thing.
Okay.
I really think I know how, what I need to do. Mind shifters seem to be much more useful even than wake-up sheets at this point. I won't go into why, but anyway, they kept me right on track, but it's very rough seas at the moment with Jacob.
Holding the space.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift.